It's like trying to win a car race.
Should be a good one.
And as you're driving, saying, hey, make it run better.
You could have a posse of waifus.
Starting off kind of strangely.
Slaying the land.
Welcome to the show.
This is insanity!
Taking a critical look at the gaming news of the week.
This info is pretty shocking.
Somebody's got to give an answer to this.
This is augmented reality.
You are watching my favorite channel.
I've not heard of them.
The Triple S League. Enjoy, guys.
Is there anything lamer than celebrities who think the hip new thing is cool? Well, we'll discuss that today as we talk about Hollywood celebrities now just getting into getting into NFTs, man.
It's so not Matt Damon's fault that, you know, a bunch of people lost all their money. I mean, Matt Damon said that, you know, the future is for the bold, and at least they were bold.
I suppose boldly going where too many people have gone before to bankruptcy court. I don't know. Anyway, welcome to the Triple S League podcast. Sorry, the augmented reality podcast presented by the Triple S League, your source for news, leaks, and analysis of games in the gaming industry. We also talk about other relevant pop culture stuff, and we will be talking about Hollywood celebs. Oh, one of our favorite topics. We love Hollywood celebrities, and everything they do is amazing, and we should listen to them. We should take our advice from them about how to be good moral people and buy into whatever crap they're shilling. And sarcasm. So, this is, again, where we talk about what's going on in gaming and in pop culture in general. Coming at you live on YouTube and archived almost anywhere you can find podcasts. My name is Ash, and I'm here with Sibsidian and Moontag, as always. Today, it's going to be a little different. We're going to be mostly reviewing games today. We're going to be talking about Dying Light 2 and Lost Ark, two games that have very recently come out. And also, we'll be talking about, again, NFTs, but we'll try to do it in a more lighthearted sense than we have in days past.
I mean, it's at the point where it's kind of a comedy now anyway.
Well, yeah, so. I can't believe this is top news every week now. Like, who's doing NFTs now?
What's the latest scam that turned out people invested, you know, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars in, and then turns out that the people who raised that money either, you know, did something incredibly stupid, like, you know, selling plots on an island that they don't own, buying a book and assuming that they can turn it into a movie because they now own the rights.
Yeah.
You know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera,
so clearly,
et cetera.
A lot of the people buying into this stuff don't even understand what they are.
Well, it's all FOMO, right? Like that, and that's the worst thing about microtransactions is their FOMO. You know, I play my phone game and again, I'm playing a particular phone game because I love the genre, I love the series, I love the concept of the mech warrior games. And for the last like 5 years, there's been one RTS, not RTS, like it's like a strategy, like turn-based MechWarrior game. And then there's been MechWarrior Online, the new MechWarrior Mercenaries, and that's it. And all of those games, like the strategy, like turn-based one is great, but I've played through it so many times now that I can't get any more enjoyment out of it. And then the other ones are just made with really, really crap engines. And the only other game that's come out that's a mech game is this phone game. And I mean, even with that, it's like, oh, you've got an hour to you. I've got 9 hours to buy, you know, 5 event tokens, which will probably net me something that I could get in like, you know, an hour or two of grinding. But it costs, you know, $45. It's like, That fear of missing out is still strong, and I hate the microtransactions. I hate these things because it's like you guys could just make a good game. Like this game, if they just made it like a really good esports thing and like encouraged it that way, I'm positive it would gain them more money in the long run than this cheap, like microtransaction-y fueled mess that it is right now. But
yeah, and this is something
more and more of these companies are starting to realize that this is the only way for them, you know, to make money outside of microtransactions, and the whole microtransaction thing is coming to an end. Like, again, it's not it's not like we have politicians like banking on this, but more and more politicians are taking note. And when they, you know, when they get rid of the latest, you know, devil that they can blame for all their woes, they're going to target the next one. And I think the next one's probably going to, like, microtransactions is on that list somewhere, right? It's somewhere on a top five list of like boogeymen to blame ASAP as soon as the current boogeyman fails to, you know, or is done or whatever, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, this, and again, yes, it seems to be the next thing that the gaming industry is trying to do to squeeze money out of us, aside from making, just making games, which is, you know, isn't that what they're supposed to be doing? I mean, can't you just make a game and let us buy it? Yeah. Like, or even, you know, you want that recurring income, make a great online game with a subscription fee. Like, why can't we just go back to that model?
Like, I'm not opposed to cosmetics being sold, because what you get with cosmetics being sold is, like, instead of a game where it's a subscription thing, right? And you're like, hey, let's make a fireman costume. It's like, fireman costume. I mean, who's gonna like, you know, do the content to unlock that? I mean, that seems a little silly. And you're like, it could be, you know, it could be great, could be fine, could be cool. And you're like, you know what? It's really not, though. You know, it's not the coolest thing. You don't have people lining up out around the block to get into this. You know, maybe we should just
Preston walks up to you. Another colony is on fire. They need you.
Yeah, right. Right. So it's like, who's going to get that? Not very many people over the whole, you know, and they may not necessarily enjoy it over the whole. But if you charge $5 for it, I mean, that 5% of your player base that does want that, you know, at least they get it then. And so there's an argument. I don't know if it's a good argument or not, but there is an argument to be made for that concept. But, like, just with everything else there, it's like, I don't know if that's the best argument to make. I don't know if that's the best goal to, like, aim for. So I don't know. Honestly, it's one of those things where it's like...
Yeah, but you look at... Okay, let's look at a game like Among Us. Quality game. People really enjoyed playing it. It's free. Okay, the PC version's not free. But you can play, you know... Mm-hmm. It wasn't that much. It was like $5 or something.
And if that was a microtransaction fueled mess, probably wouldn't have that level of success, honestly. True,
but it does have microtransactions. You can buy costumes and stuff, and for people who love the game and want to support the developers by buying some cosmetics, and so they can have a cool costume, whatever. Totally fine with that. It's not trying to manipulate you into it. It's not predatory. It's not the FOMO. It's
basically not pay to play.
Yeah.
That's what I hate the most.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not play to play. It's not pay to win. You don't get like an extra chance. You don't get an, you know, extra bonus if to win the game. If you pay money, it's just, yeah, hey, I've got a funny hat and a pet that follows me around and everyone's having fun. Right. It's a good time anyway. So yeah, we'll discuss NFTs a little bit later in the show. We're going to do our game talk first. And I just want to say welcome to everyone who is live in the live chat. Please do slam that like button if you haven't yet. And of course, check out our Discord community. You can find the link in the description below. It's a great place you can hang out, interact with other listeners, be part of the discussion. We've got the Triple S League YouTube channel, which is different from this channel. This is Triple S Podcasts. Almost said something different there. This is Triple S Podcast. We've got the Triple S League channel, where you can find game reviews and game guides, comedy stuff, and a variety of content. Got a Patreon, where you can unlock some unique artwork from our own Moontag and a few other goodies. I'll admit it's not a lot there, but we want to give something back to those who are supporting us financially to say thank you. So anyway, all of that out of the way, let's get into it. And yes, hello Wigglytype, hello to the big GN, and hello to Sentinel Cheese, all of fine folks from our community listening in live. All right. So Dying Light 2. Let's talk about Dying Light 2. By the way, for those of you who are in our Discord community and are wondering why I haven't joined you for multiplayer on Dying Light 2 yet, sorry about that. I am loving the game, and I would love to get in there and play with you guys. I think some of the guys are playing right now, Cosme and Polly's. If someone can let them know that it's not because I don't want to join them, but just things have... I've just got too much crap going on. And so I'm scattered. I'm all over the place. I can't focus on a co-op game. But anyway, yes, squish the like button. Thank you, Game Notes. Anyway, let's talk about Dying Light 2. So this is a game that has had a bit of a rocky development process. And I
say that's, the least.
That's an understatement. Yeah, that's an understatement. It's had an incredibly rocky development process. There was a point a couple of years ago where we were wondering if this game was dead in the water and wouldn't ever see the light of day. No pun intended there. But yeah, it's fraught with problems. We're not going to go through all the details, but somehow through all of that, and they had, you know, the Chris Avalon controversy was mm-hmm. part of all of this. He was on as a staff writer, and then he wasn't because of that whole controversy with him, which, you know, and now he's countersuing the people who made the allegations against him, stuff like that. So it was a mess. Plus, of course, COVID slowed things down, made things really difficult. And yet, somehow, they produced something really, really good. And, you know, the reviews are reflecting that. My opinion reflects that. You know, there's... I'll you know, and of course, I'll be honest about what I like and what I don't. Lots of people
having fun, right?
Lots of people having fun. And this kind of relates to our previous topic. or, you know, kind of our long-winded intro, I guess. It's a fun game that people are having fun with and playing and having fun. Isn't that
imagine
what
that is a concept?
I
right?
know, like just fun. No in-game stores, no things popping up saying, hey, you can boost your XP for the next 30 minutes by doing this or spending this money here. It's just a game. It's just a game, man. It's just a game. That's fun. Unbelievable. So, yeah. So what a concept. So I guess just briefly, Saib, how did Techland go from a mess of a development process to producing something that is seems to be quite a quality product?
I think, well, they just buckled down and worked on it, right? They weren't out talking about how great they are or how, you know, they're reinventing the wheel again because, you know, it really needs that 15th iteration. Not that there isn't something better than the wheel out there, but if you don't have a clear vision on that as a primary concept, then you're going to run into difficulty implementing that. I think there's a sci-fi wheel out there that probably does a better job at being a wheel than the wheels that we currently have. But again, I don't think you're going to invent that in a carpenter shop, right? Well, and again, yeah, not saying certain devs are carpenters and not actual, like, you know, rocket ship designers. I'm all over with the metaphors, but basically what I'm trying to get at is, like, you have to know your limits and you have to know what is a healthy limit versus what is an unhealthy conceptual idea that you think is going to be, you know, is going to change the world. It's like there's a point in which it gets, you know, that gets extremely unhealthy. Just this concept of, like, well, I can do no wrong, I'm better than everybody, blah 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 blah, that kind of thing. It's like, it's very unhealthy when developers do it. It's unhealthy when fans do it as well. And there's a lot of fans out there who, you know, they're like, oh, you know, this game is going to cure cancer, it's going to be great, it's going to do this, it's going to do that, you know, it's going to be everything that I've ever wanted in a video game ever. And it's like, but is it though? I mean, is it really, you know? And that's the difficulty when you're looking at that. That's the problem with, you know, either believing yourself or pumping up somebody else, is that if it is going to be the best thing, greatest thing ever, then, you know, why, you know, you have to support it, you have to push it, et cetera, et cetera. So
right.
I think here all they did to give them success where, you know, another company so close to them had, was that they just buckled down and focused on it. Now, sure, there's some minor issues. There's some minor issues with some audio recording. You know, they clearly didn't have the biggest budget for that, but that's all like second and third rate characters. As far as what I was hearing, well, you know, again, a bunch of our community were playing this in our Discord, you know, and I could hear that some of the acting wasn't like 100%. It was like 80-75%, but those weren't primary characters. Those were third rate characters you meet once or twice, or some background dialogue that you don't really like. You know, it's from the random mob that comes screaming out at you from the tower or what. You know, and again, it's not a 25%. It's not a terrible. It's just not perfect as far as like that goes. And that's a pretty small complaint. That's a really, I would say, unhealthy level of complaint. Now it's had it peaked at nearly 160,000 as far as like people playing it at the same time. The game has done quite well. Again, considering the opposition that it had, considering all the problems that it had, we can estimate that they probably have sold pretty close to 500,000 copies on Steam at the minimum, maybe more. And hopefully, you know, hopefully this game continues to do really, really well. The multiplayer functionality in it seems to work pretty decently. I do wish I had a character creator. Like, it's the second iteration in the story. You have tons of multiplayer capacity for it. I really wish these games would give you some character, some personality, because when you play multiplayer, you're playing as the same guy. So you're all played as the same guy.
Yeah, exactly. You're all the same. So I wonder if that's something they've got in the pipe for later. I mean, it feels like...
I doubt it. It feels like
something that must have occurred to them. Like, okay, we're going to put co-op in this, but we're going to have a bunch of clones of the main guy running around.
It turns out the real weapon, the real super weapon this guy has, isn't the fact that he's, you know, some kind of like half zombie with the ability to like, you know, do amazing parkour. But turns out he can bilocate himself.
that's a
pretty powerful ability.
Indeed.
It's things like that that make me kind of shake my head and laugh a little bit. It's honestly kind of funny. It really is.
I agree about the character creator, and often like character creation is not as important to me as it is to you in most games. But as far as this one, I feel like it would have benefited from that. Specifically,
not everybody can have Geralt of Rivia or the Master Chief as their primary, you know, primary character. Blah blah blah.
Well, could you imagine the Witcher co-op if they put co-op in the Witcher, but everyone's Geralt? Like that just wouldn't work. And so that's kind of what they've done with this. I don't know how you kind of work that in your head that there shouldn't be a character creator, unless it got cut for time and budget constraints or something. I'm glad they didn't sacrifice something else in the game to make the character creator happen. I'll say that, but it would have been a welcome addition for sure. As Game Note says, you have to pick a focus at some point as a developer, right?
Yeah, you do. Yeah.
You have to decide.
There is a lot of time and space you can save by not having a character creator in it. Right away that saves you on at least one additional voice set.
Your main character voice actor would, you'd have to double, you know, because you'd have to at least double
and it. It's not, I mean, but it, at the same time, it's not as hard as some people think it is. It really isn't. Like, some people are like, finding two good voice actors, that's nearly impossible.
But you have to
what
find...
What do you expect?
You have to find them, you have to pay them, you have to process all that audio.
It's not actually that hard. It really
isn't. Not hard, but, I mean, it is an extra expense. It is an extra constraint on your time. And so
I'm not saying that they had to, or that, you know, they were cheap by not doing it. I'm just saying it's not as expensive as other things are. There are entire concepts that are scrapped routinely, almost on a daily basis, that have cost the company more money in scrapping those, like, those conceptual ideas of creating some kind of a system or a gameplay system or a gameplay arc or some kind of like graphical technology. There are whole fields of this stuff that are routinely scrapped on a daily basis by just, if you take almost all of the game studios that are working on this stuff, that together they are burning way more of that experience, of that money, they're wasting time, money, and experience in developing those things that they end up trashing and not using at all, than doing a comparative assessment of adding in like a character creator and or at least a character, you know, picker. Like, you could pick between like four main characters, you know, four characters or two characters or whatever.
Right.
It's like you're still burning way more of that money doing that than you are in not doing the character creators.
Very fair point.
So again, it's not the same in every scenario, but it's just generally as a rule, that's how it works. So it's not that expensive. And again, I'm not dissing them for it. It's just, I think their game would have more staying power if they had done that. Like, I don't expect Dying Light to start to go up over the next couple of weeks and months as far as like people playing the game. I think going forward, it'll have a really good review base. And if somebody wants to play a zombie adventure RPG game, this is the story for them to pick. This is the experience for them to play in. And this is, generally speaking, a very good choice for them. And they've done a really good job in creating this game. But I don't think it has the staying power in it that it could have had if they had introduced more options for the player and had that available, you know, for people to play. Now, again, watching these people play it in our Discord, most of them don't care about that. So I might be wrong on that. Let me know in the comments. I mean, know your choice. Does playing a clone character, is that wiggy for you at all? Is that an issue when you play other games? Like, I mean, Halo, for example, right? You're technically bi-locating as Master Chief. So, and I've, for the record, I have made the same points in that in the past. I'm not being picky and choosy here, but yeah, Master Chief is another great example. It's like, the Doom guy, right? Doom Slayer, all these kinds of stuff. Am I wrong on that? Please let me know in the comments. Let me know your opinion on that, because I'd like to hear what everybody else thinks on that. That's my take on it from a technical standpoint. So Paulie's is saying the clone character is not an issue for him. And like I said, I suspect that a lot of people will say, you know, it's gameplay first, you know, and I would rather have the gameplay play well than to have a character creator. That's something I'm curious about.
Yes, I agree. I don't think that's not enough to ruin my experience for sure. So to get into a bit of the nitty gritty of what I liked and didn't like about this game, Notional asked, by the way, if you have any specific questions that you'd like me to answer or other folks in the chat to answer, drop those in the live chat right now. Notional asks, is it fun to dropkick zombies off the roof in Dying Light 2? The answer is unequivocally yes. like, as far as yeses go, that is the most yes answer that I think I've ever answered on this podcast. It is a ton of fun to drop kick zombies off the roof in Dying Light 2. Actually, the combat and parkour are really fun, really satisfying overall. It started off a little slow, and so at first I wasn't sure. I was like, is this going to be all that good? But as you begin to accumulate points, level up, add skills, pick the skills that you're going to use, you start to speed up, you have more stamina, you have, you know, it got really good, really fast. And I'm 20 plus hours in, and I'm not even halfway through skill trees. I'm not halfway through discovering everything on the map. There's so much here, and I'm just discovering new things still 20 hours into the game. And it's going to depend on how you play. I've split my time about 50-50 between story quests and side quests and just general exploration, encounters, things like that. But what I'm finding the progression is really is slow, which I actually like. It's solid and it's satisfying. Like, you feel like you're really earning every point and every bit of XP that you get. So I really like that. I really like that. I also really like, even though it's really frustrated me at a few points, the game does not hold your hand. If you try to do something that's beyond your level, the world just kicks your ass with no apologies and sends you home. And I really like that too. Trying to climb a windmill that, you know, I didn't have the stamina for, and I fell off it about 5 times. I was like, what's going on here? I look at the map. Oh, this is a level 4. Okay, I'm a level 1. I guess I'm not going to be doing this for a while. So I actually, you know, while it is frustrating, I like it. I like that, as, you know, that it's immersive to not have the game constantly be, you know, bringing up pop-ups saying, your level is not high enough for this. So I really appreciate that aspect of the game. But yes, the parkour is really fun. The skills that you can unlock in the parkour are just, and because you're unlocking them one at a time, and it's like, oh, you get to try this out now. It's like you get really good at doing certain things, and then you get another thing you can do. And then you get another thing you can do. Really like how the progression feels in this game. Same with combat. I just unlocked the drop kick. No, I'm not playing the game on easy mode. Arturo. The only reason I'm not playing it on hard mode, on the hardest mode, is because I have to make progress in order to get guides done, but no, it's not on easy. I'm on the medium, whatever the medium is. But anyway, so where was I? Oh yeah, combat. So I just unlocked the drop kick. And the combination of, you know, the combat parkour stuff is really good as well. Like, how you can not just stagger an enemy by a well-timed block, you can then vault over them and kick another enemy, drop kick another guy off the roof, leap up onto something, and then do, like, a parkour kick. There's a lot of kicking, but there's a lot of other, a lot of other moves too. The weapon modding system. Weapons are 100% disposable. There's no weapon you're going to grab that you're using through the entire gameplay, because they wear out and break eventually. And so you kind of got to pick which weapons you're going to hang on to. You got to have some spares. I like the modding system. I'm finding that it's really hard to upgrade things. And I wonder if I'm just not doing enough grindy stuff, but so I don't know. I might have bumped up the amount of rare resources it takes to upgrade your craftables just slightly, but other than that, I really like the balance. So the open world is pretty. It's very seamless. It's very immersive. And I'm really liking the quests. You know, the quests and activities are pretty interesting. So not too much repetitiveness aside from the encounters. The encounters are, you know, kind of RNG or like procedurally. They're these like mini quests you encounter on the map where it's like, oh, somebody's being attacked, go save them. Or, oh, there's bandits, kill these 3 guys and then you get some loot. really quick little quests that are pretty repetitive. But other than that, like, a lot of it is really, really immersive. Not a lot of, you know, fetch questy kind of go here, kill everything, get the MacGuffin. So, yeah, definitely appreciating that. There's a lot of creativity that goes into these quests, and even like the parkour challenges. There's parkour challenges everywhere where you have to run around, you know, these various rooftops and buildings and things and hit all these checkpoints. But they even, you know, they dress those up in and they're all, you know, it's a series of challenges. So yeah, they're all kind of the same, but you run a different course for each one. But it's not, some of them are just a sign that you encounter that's like, hey, do this parkour challenge. But there's other ones that are like, you got to deliver this water to people in a certain amount of time, or you got to, you know, deliver these things. So they've even they put extra effort into dress some of those up in interesting ways. So I definitely do like that. Some of my favorites are things like the military convoys, like there's a crashed military convoy. There's resources inside this one truck if you can get to it and lockpick it, but there's like zombies everywhere around it. How are you going to get to it? Can you lure them away? Are you going to fight them all? There's like 20 of them. A lot of these seemingly simple quests or activities involved a lot of thought. It's like, how am I actually going to approach this? So, am I going to wait till night and try to sneak in there? Well, they're right up against the door. And if I try to, you know, I'm going to die if I just try to run in there and grab the stuff, because I have to take the time to lockpick. And the world does not freeze around you when you're lockpicking stuff. Unlike some,
unlike Skyrim.
Yeah, exactly. The zombies will eat your face while you're trying to pick a lock. So you gotta figure stuff out. Yeah, lots of variety. I like the electrical stations. I like the, there was a quest with a dog that this is one of them, probably I'm not going to go into spoilers, but this dog and a couple of kids are missing, and it's like, okay, we think they're over there. Anyway, I happen to be in the area, and suddenly I hear this dog barking. And then I remembered, I was like, oh yeah, that side quest, it's the middle of the day, and it's like, there's these kids in this dark zone, I just realized. And the dark zones during the day are full of, you know, they're full of enemies, they're full of zombies, because they stay out of the sunlight. And it was just a really memorable moment that I actually remembered that I even had this quest and was triggered to do it by hearing a dog barking and being like, I gotta go check this out, even though it's the middle of it. And I could have just, you know, gone and slept somewhere till nighttime, till it was safer. But just in terms of actual immersion and role-playing, I was like, well, I gotta do this now. I gotta rescue these kids. So some very cool moments. The day-night cycle also, as I just mentioned, it impacts the game heavily. Like, the world is very different at night than it is during the day. So those are all things that I liked. Just looking through some of the chat comments here. So Notional says, when I played the first Dying Light, I was not missing a character creator. Dying Light was great for mechanics more so than the story character. I agree. That's more what the game is about. And so it doesn't suffer. It's not like,
oh, yeah, no, it's not
bad because
it doesn't. No, I don't think it's bad because of it. Like I said, Master Chief and how many other games do the exact same thing.
Would it have been nice? Yes, it would have been. But again, it's not like,
The game. It's the, my question in that regard is like, is the sticking power, you know, of it. Mm-hmm. Would it be better if you had the ability to, like, you know, customize your character a little bit more? That's the question I'm asking. I'm not saying it's a bad game because of that, because again, there's a lot of games that don't have character creators. And I'm just wondering, in the age of, like, you know, multiplayer, is that more of an important thing when it comes to multiplayer capacity? Like, you know, that's the question. I'm not saying it's a bad game.
No, I know.
I'm just asking.
It doesn't come
or not
across that way. Will it have the sticking power? I mean, I guess that comes down to, I think, what they're planning to deliver. Apparently, they have a 5-year plan for this game.
All right. Well, in that case, if they have a 5-year plan with it, I might say that a character creator is probably in that mix somewhere. like
that'd be very,
because again, it's like you could do that, but how much is that really going to work when you're doing the same thing, you know, for that long? I mean, again, Witcher and other games could prove me wrong on that, but even the latest Witcher has the ability to play as different characters. So,
all right. So, Polly says, yes, you can get kicked from the roof yourself. That's true. That's happened to me too. The enemies have the same moves you have. And, they're no joke either. Like they have good combat moves. Polly says, I got kicked down an elevator shaft by an enemy and died. Cause you have the human enemies as well as the zombies. And you have to have very different tactics for each kind of enemy if you're engaging in hand-to-hand combat. Because there's no guns. You get a bow and arrow at one point, but there's no guns.
I just want to point out that, you know, if Europe had embraced slightly, because it takes place in Europe, right?
I think so. Although I haven't really thought about it. Where we actually are. I think it is Europe.
I'm just saying, it's like, you know, zombie apocalypse is going to be a lot easier in Europe versus like countryside America where everybody has a shotgun. Just saying, you know, unless zombies learn how to use shotguns.
which
is a scary proposition.
Some of them are smart enough. There's your standard, you know, shufflers that are out during the day. For some reason, I don't know how the all of the mechanics behind it, but there's these little shufflers that are really stupid, and then there's a lot of smarter ones too.
I trolled Polly's and a couple other guys playing in the Discord on the second day it was out. I came in and I asked them if they found the love scene between the zombie and the human that's an homage to the movie called Warm Bodies that came out on Valentine's Day a couple of years ago. And they were really disgusted until I told them that I made it up. So, yeah, if you want to troll somebody, just troll them with that.
Nice.
It was a pretty funny reaction. They were like, what? What? Are you kidding? Are you kidding? And I'm like, yes, I'm kidding. Because again, the whole Warm Bodies, like that movie was both equal parts absolutely atrocious and really funny in its baseline concept. But I don't think they pulled it off. But good lord, yeah, that was a funny troll. I laughed lots.
All right, so what did I not like about the game? Did I talk about the open world? Yeah, I did. Open world's really good. Aside from a couple of, like, there are places where you find some of the buildings have been copied and pasted or some arrangement of things. It's like, okay, I mean, you kind of have to expect that on a game of this scale, but for the most part, yeah, running around is really fun. Thinking like, okay, I got to get over there. What's over the edge of this building as you're running toward it? Like, is there something I'm going to be able to land on, or am I going to have to stop? Or like, is there something I can jump to? Lots of fun stuff. What's bad about the game? Well, kind of buggy. There's some small bugs. I got random frame drops, like frame rate drops, significant frame rate drops. After playing for a while, it would drop down to like 10, 15 frames per second. Reboot the game, that was fixed. Don't know what was causing it, but it would just seemingly happen randomly. There's a glitch where if I would fall off a building just before hitting the ground, my character would like freeze in the air for a little while. It almost felt like we'd lost connection to the server, and we were just waiting to register whether or not my character was going to hit the ground and die, which made it a little hard to, you know, because you can get a skill where, you know, you can roll when you hit the ground and it lessens your damage or eliminates your damage because video game logic. But anyway, so weird stuff like that. There are some weird animations. There's a problem with the custom key binding that I hope they fix soon. And a bug where I have quests that I didn't complete are marked as completed in my quest list, but the indicators for them are still on the map because I hadn't actually completed them, and so they're just kind of in limbo. And so, anyway, I don't know what's causing that. But overall, minor stuff. I'm encountering, like, maybe two or three bugs per hour of playing, or 1 to 2 hour play session. And Techland's working on it, so not enough to completely ruin my experience or anything. The only other thing I really didn't like is that some of the voice acting is a disaster, especially in especially when you have some of the child characters.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about. And yeah. I don't know.
I wonder if it just was not written in English originally. Like it's from a Polish developer, so it was something lost in translation, or do you have people who directing these?
High chance of that.
Yeah,
yes.
You have people directing these kids whose their first language isn't English. I mean, that might have something to do with it. Anyway, so what's now? I have some points about things that I consider to be sort of middling or average about the game, and story and characters. Now, I think the story is the thing that's getting the most criticism in terms of what people don't like about this game. But sorry, one second. Saab, can you take over here for a second?
Yeah. So, I mean, that's what I heard from the community for the most part. So the community seemed to be saying that Ash, you're still a mic, I think. Actually, I'm not sure if you're still a mic. But yeah, no, I think just generally, I think the audio is one of those things where it's really difficult to judge, right? As far as like where, if and where there were mistakes versus not. So yeah, that's one of the things that, if you have a bad translator or a bad director who does not speak that primary language, then they're going to make certain mistakes that are going to be like that. And there's some pretty hilarious ones, you know, over the years, I think there's one in JoJo's Bizarre Adventure where don't pronounce it properly. And instead of it coming out as like, I think it's Earth. It's like, I think it's Earth. And I think they pronounce it as Zaos. And so you have all these like big buff guys running around. And again, this might actually be part of the joke going, I love Zaos. I'm going to save Zaos. And I'm going to make sure that I love Zaos so much. And so because they're all like, the characters in JoJo's Bizarre Adventure are all like gigantic, like muscle bound, like, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger, like type sounding characters. I'm not making fun of like the somebody's attempted translation. I'm literally making fun of the characters. So, yeah.
Sorry. Okay. Thank you, Seth.
Arturo says that if the game is 30 FPS, he's not playing it.
Well, I've been getting a solid FPS cap. I don't know. I've been getting a solid 60 FPS.
Okay. So Arturo, it is 60 FPS on PC. I don't know about consoles though.
IX is saying 60 FPS on PS5.
IX, yeah.
Xbox. So I can't speak to the consoles. I've been getting I can't run it on maximum settings. But mm-hmm. I do have some of the ray tracing features turned on.
Anytime you're turning on ray tracing, that's eating a lot of resources.
It is, so. But I've got it. So the settings are pretty high, not maximum. I had to turn off a few things like the features that like the reflections. I turned on ray trace reflections and that just ate my frame rate for dinner. So I had to turn that off. But I do have some of the ray tracing features on, everything else at maximum except for motion blur, which I just turn right off completely because it's why motion blur?
I still don't understand why, like, does motion blur like save resources or something? Like,
I don't know. No, it doesn't.
Then why on earth is it still an option after all these years? Like, do people really like? Do developers really think people use this? That's one thing I just don't understand. Is like, why do people use or why did developers still create motion blur? Because it's, again, it's like anybody who knows how to change a system in the game automatically turns it off.
Yeah. Well, like, it's because motion blur is it's an effect you get with a real camera. And so I think they're going for realism or a more cinematic effect with it. Turkey Master points out. Anyway, I really apologize for having to duck out there inside. Thank you so much for covering for me. All of a sudden, I'm hearing footsteps upstairs. I'm like, somebody's in my house. It was my wife just bringing the dog home from a grooming appointment, which I was not expecting. But now my dog is... she's off doing something.
Hairless.
I'll have to check on her in a second. But anyway, sorry. I apologize for the interruption there. All right, I'm going to wrap up, and then I'll get Saib and Moon on to talking about Lost Ark. So, yeah. Story and character. I agree. They're not. It's not like an epic, groundbreaking story, but it's not bad either. The main character, Aiden, I wish we had more backstory on him and the reason, like what's driving him in this story. You kind of get thrown into it and are introduced to why Aiden's doing things in flashbacks, which is okay. But yeah, I agree with the comments about that, or the people who have said that it's hard to get emotionally invested in Aiden. And some of the other, I actually like a lot of the other characters that you encounter in the, you know, in the city. But anyway, haven't gotten to the end of the story. I do kind of know what happens because I looked ahead. But story's not terrible. Story's not terrible. I would say it's average. It's average. Now, as far as choice and consequence, this is another thing that has disappointed some people, is that, you know, we were promised this game where your choices really affect the world. And in some ways they do, and in some ways they don't. Your city alignment choices, because for some reason you have the supreme authority to assign regions of the city to either of the main two factions. Video game logic, I don't know. But so...
he's just got that winning personality.
Yeah, exactly. Well, he's the only one with the skills to climb up and get into these places. So you have to go in and activate them, and then you can assign them to one of the factions. And apparently that gives you the right to just decide who's in control. So that your choices as far as city alignment, it affects the world around you significantly. If you give the facilities to the survivors, each facility you give to the survivors, you unlock a survivor perk, which adds like parkour equipment around the city in each area that they control. And then if you give it to the peacekeepers, they install traps in each area of the city that they control. Now you unlock their top level perks. If you give one faction all of the different areas, then, you know, you unlock better and better perks for them. You can't give, you know, you can't unlock everything on both sides. You have to pick and choose. So it's kind of interesting in that effect, because it literally does affect how you go about and interact with the world and what you're able to do. But these choices, these city alignment choices, have zero impact on the story at all, except for the very first facility that you assign to a faction. That is also a story choice. But yeah, your story choices will change which quest you get next, but not really. They don't affect your... it's not like it's a massive branching story. You're choosing the connection path between the same story beats, basically. So this is kind of toned down from, I think, what people were expecting and what we were maybe originally promising. Are promised by the developer. So, point of discussion on this, and I don't know how much time, because this has gone on longer than expected, but a point of discussion: how many times have devs promised big open worlds with choices that have huge impact, only for the impact to feel average at best? And are we even at a point where a big butterfly effect sandbox world is achievable?
Like, there was tech that was able to create this, but the it is now sitting in a Russian hard asset vault, and it was not perfected. It was a ways away from being like actually like usable in that level. So,
and that was my next question: is has anyone really pulled it off? Because I can't think of a game where they've pulled it off.
No. It's simply like there are some like text-based ones or games that are extremely limited graphics that claim to be able to do that, but that is very much an exaggeration on anybody's like perspective of like how things work. That is a math, like, oh, well, such and such, you know, game was able to do it. It's like, yeah, but that's through text. We don't have the technology to do that with an actual living world. Like, not even in the slightest.
Yeah. And I think there's games like Turkey Master points out that Detroit Become Human came closest.
That is room based micro choices. So the environment is changing, like is not changing hardly at all. The choices are so, like, again, if you're pointing out or you're pointing to just a generalized like choice driven experience, is like text games have been doing this for ages and ages and ages, but it's easy for them to do it and it's very difficult for other gaming concepts to do it, especially like 3D worlds or like anything that has any like ounce of like, you know, factions or multiplayer, that stuff like that. It's very difficult to have that like factor into that aspect. So,
but they do have a system where, you know, you make choices that do significantly affect the world, even though it's not this big dynamic system. You do, you know, each area that you give control to a certain faction, it changes that area, and you get like different structures pop up, you know, and then the survivors put in, like I said, these parkour assist things that help you in traversal, and the peacekeepers put in traps and combat things to help you if you're fighting the zombie hordes. So it's enough that I want to do a second playthrough and side with the other faction just to experience the game that way, and also experience the other quests, because then, you know, there's points in the story where you make a certain choice and suddenly you've made an enemy of an important character on the other side and are fighting, you know, and fighting against them. And if you had sided with them, you'd be fighting against the people you're currently allied with. And so there's enough there that I do want to experience a second playthrough. So IX says, is there any point in doing the big choices? Well, I mean, you have to, and some of the choices affect the ending you get. Again, I don't know how the ending, there are different endings. There's good endings and bad endings. Are they drastically different? No. Like, again, the story follows the same beats for the most part. But I agree with IX saying the choices were mismarketed. Yeah, I agree. And that was, of course, years ago. And I think they realized they had overpromised.
I think the mistake is that, like, a lot of these games are overpromising. I mean, like, what's the best game that's overpromised? Star Citizen! 10 years now. It has now been a decade in development. A decade in full-blown development. And we still can't play the darn game. Wow. Just wow. I mean, wow.
Katriox, like, says
$400 million in, and they haven't been able to produce a dang thing.
Katriox says, loving Dying Light 2, got 24 hours in, 25 hours in so far. That's about where I am too. Yeah. I like the story, but some characters put me to sleep. Yeah, I could agree with that. Polly says, the story is good for me. I finished it and I like it. It's not the best story in the world, but it's a solid story and it did a good enough job to keep me interested. Based on the portion of the story that I've experienced, I can absolutely agree. I can absolutely agree with that. Game Notes says the biggest, my biggest gripe is not being crossplay, but as far as game systems, it would be the chemical area. So you mean your biggest gripe about the chemical? They are annoying. There's these areas where it's like you can't go here, or you know, there's these, they're it's infected with these chemicals that'll kill you really fast. And yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's, I'm not far enough through yet to know if it's something that you get, like, do you get something that mitigates that later so you can venture to those areas? Or is it just, is that how they keep you contained to this area?
It's probably how they keep you contained in a game world where you have like the ability to go anywhere and do anything. It's like, well, you could technically, like, you technically, if you actually had a world that was actually laid out like New York City, and there was actually an area where the big bad guy was, or there were areas, plural, where there was big, like, objective-based things, and you really had a 100% open world, and you had any ability to fly or traverse, like, outside of buildings, you could literally get from one side of the city to the other side of the city in a matter of, like, you know, 20, 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Because again, it's like without a natural barrier, you just don't have that ability to, like, you're not held anywhere. Mm-hmm. And that's a thing that is the main reason why we have water in games. It's one of the main reasons why we have a bunch of other just generalized, like, stoppers in games, including just stoppers where, like, they don't even pretend, right? It's just like your character just turns around. Oh, I can't go that way. I have to finish saving the city first.
I was going to say, yeah, it's much better to do something like this than to.
And it's part of, I mean, it's part of, like, where does the line end, right? Like if you really create that kind of a world where you're like, okay, we're not going to put up any barriers, you quickly have to create an entire planet, because it's like, why can't I go outside the city? Well, because your mission isn't outside. But I want to go outside the city. Okay, we'll let you go outside the city. Okay, now why can't I go outside the state?
Yeah.
Well, because why can't I go outside the country? Okay, all right, we'll give you the ability to go outside the country. Excuse me, why can't I go to the middle of the ocean? Like, okay, fine, we'll give you the ability to go to the middle of the ocean. I don't know why you want. Hey, why can't I go to space? This is, after all, a realistic medieval fantasy game. Why can't I build rockets and go to space? And the answer to that is, okay, I guess we'll let you go to space. It never ends, right? It's like censorship. In a form, it is, right? Because it's like it's preventing you from experiencing, you know, something. But yeah, that's the thing, right? Like, that's the legitimately, that's the thing. Is like, where do you draw the line? Because you have to draw it somewhere. And so the reason why you have chemical areas is the same reason why you can't go to space in your medieval game.
Yeah.
Because there's got to be a line somewhere that makes logical sense, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
When you hit that
invisible wall or that thing that just says, you can't go in this direction, that is,
but I
that
have
is hugely
to say,
immersion breaking.
I have to say that there is room, right, for this to function this way. To give you that access to be able to explore anything, because one of the more popular animes last year or last season, well, yeah, that was last year, was this anime in which this guy gets reincarnated into a medieval world, and his dream was like to go to space or something. And so he instead of like slaying the demon lord and you know going on merry quests into dungeons, he immediately causes an industrial revolution in the sole purpose of trying to like get to the point where he can build a spaceship and go to space. So yeah, there's we just can't create worlds that big yet, but eventually that will be that'll be a thing, right? That'll be an option, and that's a very hilarious option when I think about it.
Yeah.
Because it's like
that'll be the day when you have a game that
goblins in space, right?
That'll be the day when you have a game that you can not only go anywhere in the world, but you can go to any time period of the world. That'll be a massive.
Yeah, we'll all be Doctor Who eventually. Yeah.
So, okay. Eventually. Final thoughts. I give this a very high rating. If I had to give it a number, I would give it an 8.5 out of 10. I love this game. I'm just having a blast with it. Again, I wasn't sure about it at the beginning. I wasn't sure how much I would get into it, but I'm really, really, again, as I'm progressing through it, improving my character, discovering new things, I'm having a blast with it. Currently sitting at about an 8 to an 8.5 out of 10. And the people in our community who are playing it, and some of whom have finished it, are saying the same thing. So if it's the type of thing you like, then this is a solid entry in this genre. So if you're a fan of this type of genre, definitely check it out. And as far as if you're tired of zombie stuff, I was talking to my brother-in-law about this. He said he wasn't terribly interested in it because he was tired of zombie stuff. I can understand that, but at the same time, I keep forgetting there are zombies in this game. Because I get so wrapped up in everything else that's going on, and then I'll run out onto the street, and it's like, oh yeah, there's zombies here. Time for the running away now.
Zombies is one of those things, so it's just the perennial, it's like werewolves and vampires, but actually on a much shorter loop, where people get tired of zombies in their media, but then all it takes is like one, there, it's only ever like one IP or one story away from it being the number one like seller of that year again. And so it's just kind of cool to see and be reminded that there's always like whenever you're like, you know, oh, I don't like this trope, it's like, well, you just wait until they're back again because, yeah, you know.
Well, it's, and, just and like it's style. Also it's also about what the creative vision for it is. Like, zombies are the backdrop of this game. It's the type of, it's the apocalypse that they've gone with. And you know, there's a zillion different types of apocalypse scenarios now, but they went with zombies and it's the backdrop, but it's not, the game is not kill hordes of zombies. The game is a lot bigger than that. It's built on this backdrop, and they built something good on this, you know, rather standard type of scenario, the zombie apocalypse. But they've done something really well and really creative with it, so it doesn't feel tired and old to me. The zombie stuff actually works really well, in my opinion. So those are my thoughts on Dying Light 2, and we're going to wrap it up there. Because we've got to get on to the other topics here. We're already an hour into the show.
Lols.
But, so, Simon Moon are going to talk about Lost Ark next. First, I'm just going to say...
We only have a day, because it's only been out a day, so our reactions aren't nearly... It's going to be nearly as long as our review of Dying Light 2. So the big thing about Lost Ark, it's like, well, why are we playing it? Well, we're playing it because it's an MMO slash Diablo-esque hack and slash that has somehow managed to bork the trend. And the trend is that MMOs come out, they start out with like, you know, X number of players, and then they gradually lose that base down to usually 5 to 10% of that player base at peak release. This is not the case for Lost Ark. Lost Ark has released in three separate regions and has, over the last 2 years, grown in all of those regions. In all of those regions, their steady user base, active players every month, continues to go up. Not accounts, active players. Because again, free players, you can argue, yeah, they always go up because, you know, people, you know, log in for 5 minutes, don't like it, uninstall. But that's still a new account, so therefore that new account is now has like, you know, and there was a time in which certain companies tried to use that as a way of showing growth, and that was very, very, very illegal because you don't do that. Like, you can't say, well, we had 20,000 users last month, now we have 40,000 users this month, we've gone up.
Well, except for 25,000 of those accounts are bot accounts that were created in the last month and a half. It's like, yeah, right? Like, there's reasons why they can't and don't do that. So yeah, this is a case of an MMO genre game defeating quite soundly the concept and way that a game is supposed to grow. It's not supposed to grow like this, as far as like all current metrics go, because nobody knows how to make a good MMO because they're too stupid or they're too greedy or they're too busy, you know, harassing the intern, you know, trying to get booty picks or something like that, because, you know, they're a bunch of sleaze balls. You know, call out to our favorite, you know, former companies here. It's really quite sad that the MMO industry, which is the genre, is supposed to be all about putting you and your friends together and letting you have fun without being dead set on trying to build or to control or to establish some like crazy level of repetition, forced repetitive play that results in you spending more money to not do those forced repetitive plays. It's like, there's so many systems in WoW, in other places, where it's like, yeah, we want you to play the game, but the game is, to be honest, quite terrible because we haven't actually made good gameplay in like, you know, two decades. And so therefore we're being forced to force you to play the game the way that we want you to play the game, which is essentially not playing the game, you know? And so that's that system. That's that repetitive, wheel that the MMO genre has been on. Hamster wheel. That's the word I was looking for. That's the hamster wheel that the MMO genre has been on for decades now.
So this one's not like that, though.
This one's not like that. This one is, sure, it has repetitive gameplay, but it has an enormous amount of different gameplay. You want to, like, so again, it's an isometric hack and slash as far as like what it physically plays like most of the time, but it also has several different game options built into the mechanics of how you play the game. And there's all these islands that offer different experiences, everything from playing out as a sprite on a two-dimensional plane, doing a platform, trying to avoid being eaten by some parrots. There's fights where you fight a giant golem who hates birds. Shout out to Dragon Age Origins, and you and all the other players turn into chickens, and you fight the giant golem in chicken form as chickens. That's the fight. And you all have different abilities, and then you're like, oh, that's just variations of the same gameplay. Well, there's also an island where it's a horror island. And the entire island is as far as I understand, it's a non-combat island where you're supposed to find clues and discover things whilst also getting scared. Like, it's a very, like, they're changing the game, they're changing the playbook when it comes to games that you play with your friends, and they're making it different. They're making it unique. And this is why the game has grown. Because you can go to an island that's all about swimming pools, and your character puts on a swimming outfit, and they exchange their giant metal swords and big fantasy guns for water guns and foam swords, and you run around and you play like that. There's also a permanent Christmas island in which you fight only with snowballs. And the mechanics are very, it's like very trajectory based with snowballs, as real snow fights are. And again, these are permanent things. You just, if you want to go there with your friends and do stuff, you can go there with your friends and do stuff. And you're rewarded for doing that. You're rewarded for having fun with your friends just by doing fun things, which again is a concept that it seems so alien for me to talk about, this concept of doing fun things with your friends, which is the whole reason why this genre was created. Most would say, some would argue that it was to, you know, see who had the biggest e-penis. But yeah, this the fact that this is a generalized concept of the genre that has never been fully realized is, like, recently, is shocking. And every time you look at, like, other companies, like, you know, like Blizzard and World of Warcraft, and you ask, why aren't your games like this? And you ask that question, why aren't your games like this? The answer you get is, when you look at it, actually, not when you ask that question and get a physical answer, when you actually look at the systems and look at the things and look at all the stuff that they're doing, the answer is, it's more profitable for our company to do it this way. It's more profitable for our company to make you hate playing this game because it makes us more money when you pay to skip our stupid game.
Does it really? Like, yes, I mean, that's a bizarre system. How did we end up there?
Microtransactions.
Yeah, I know, but like, why is it actually more profitable for them to do that? Obviously, they do that because it's profitable.
So you look at World of Warcraft, you look at the race to world first, or the race to getting the ahead of the curve achievement, the FOMO in that, meaning that you have, you know, 8 months to play this expansion or this patch in this expansion. And during that 8 months, you have to do this, do that, and do this other thing to get this achievement for being, you know, one of the first people to do this thing. As somebody who used to, and as much as recently went back to the game and proved that I very much could do this whenever I wanted to. It's hard generally speaking, but if you're a good gamer, you can definitely get it done. But if you don't have the time, or if you don't have the skill level, or if you just don't have the people skills to develop a group of people to actually go and do those things, speaking from somebody who got a world first at one point, and I got a world first by, strangely enough, being a people person, it was one of the few times that I actually managed to pull that off. Which, again, long-term fans of the show will know, I'm not very much of a good people person. I'm very terrible at it at times, but it's like that one time that I was able to really pull that off, we got a world first, and we ended up, my small guild of filled with mostly people who were just there to play and have fun together and to role play ended up being slotted into the, I think we were number 7 worldwide because of that, because I happened to lead a run and actually managed to get a world first. And it's one of those things that happened years and years and years and years ago, made news in a bunch of places. But why is that not something I can do anymore? Because you simply can log into the game, spend $20-$30 buying game tokens, and then selling those game tokens for in-game gold, then going, hey, can somebody run me through this dungeon, this raid? And they'll be like, all right, we'll put you through the raid here. It'll take you about 15 minutes. We're going to do the thing. Boom, you carried through. And boom, you got the achievement. You got the credit for doing this really hard thing. And then they take that money, and then they convert it back to WoW tokens, and then they convert those WoW tokens into real money. And that's why it's more profitable, because every time that happens, Blizzard is making money.
Yeah.
Because you're buying it for $20, $30, but they're getting it sold back for like $15, $20. And each time that happens, Blizzard is making stacks. And they're just like, money, 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 because like, you want a rare piece of armor that is no longer available in the game. Well, it is available in the game. It's available on the black market, in which you buy directly from the system, not from other players, from the system. You buy this piece of armor. And this piece of armor costs 9 million gold. That's about $250 worth of tokens. So, again, players go, they buy $250 worth of tokens, they sell those $250 worth of tokens, and suddenly they can buy this rare piece of gear. What did they do for it? Did they grind? Did they do some special challenge? Did they get, in the top 5% for PvP players? No, they just had $250 to spend on it. And so that's why World of Warcraft and all these other MMOs have designed more and more of their systems to be skipped, to be passed by, because you don't have the time. It's not worth it. It's annoying. It's frustrating. It's too difficult. You can't form a community to do it because you're bad at being, forming a community. And it's just easier to pay the $200. And this game hasn't had that. Hasn't had that yet. So,
well, and hopefully never will. But you're saying it's playership is trending upward in all the different markets, and that's really interesting. So, and Moon, you were telling me before we started here that it's way more fun than WoW, and yes, there's some things you're really enjoying.
Because it's not just endless fetch quests. And my character is gorgeous. I have cute costume. I have cute hair, and I have cute pets. And, like, my moves are, like, my fighting is, like, interesting. It's not just, like, buttons upon buttons upon buttons upon buttons. Like, it's actually, like, divvied up fairly well. Like, I chose to play a bard class, and I got a harp. And so I make little music noises whenever I do my thing. It's great. And, like, even, like, I ran into, like, this area just outside of the starting town, and I saw two players, just dancing. So I was like, I'm going to join in and dance too. And it was great. And then when they were leaving, they waved at me and then like ran off. But it was like, just randomly cute and fun. And like, I love the designs of these characters, like both the guy and the girl designs, although I'm like, I'm a girl all the way. I like the girl designs. And like, just, it's very pretty to look at. Like that's one thing they definitely has over New World. Like New World, I did not like the aesthetics that much. But this one, I love the costumes. I love the character. I love like the environment is very pretty. It's like, the quests aren't that far from like the quest giver as well. So it's not like you have to like trapeze all over the continent to do the one quest.
Mm-hmm. And we did last night, we did the all of the dungeons that we were able to do, which was three or four of them, on hard mode. And it's just the two of us. It's designed between 1 to 5 players. And it was like the first couple ones it wasn't that challenging, but the last one was like really challenging. It was really difficult, and yet we managed to do it. And that was quite exciting. That was quite fun. That was like, yay. We were both like, wow, we finally got it. The last boss was really difficult. But yeah, there's this fun quantity that I'm having in the game that I haven't had for a really long time. There was some like, other than like a minor technical issue, there wasn't anything that was holding us back, in the game. So yeah, it was, I got to say that so far initial reactions are, well, this game's pretty darn fun and it's pretty engaging and there's lots to do. So yeah, it's looking, honestly, it's looking really solid. And I'm hoping that we can continue, that it'll continue being really solid. So we have built a guild, because again, the reason why I love MMOs so much is because they let you play with friends.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the whole point of the experience, is to play with friends. And frankly, it's one of the more like interesting things I love doing is to be engaged, is to have, these experiences, because it's something that is normally quite difficult in normal life, because, everybody's got jobs, sometimes you're not as good as, you're sometimes an annoying person. This is coming from myself. And the only time where you get to have fun is when you can meet outside of those restrictions, and games do offer a little bit of that ability to have that. So some people call that sad. I just call that reality.
Well, you have as somebody with autism, you have
fairly severe autism.
You've explained. I mean, it made a world of sense when you explained that to me. That you did that podcast with Des Mephisto, and you guys talked about how, you know, these games are games really appeal.
They're equalizers.
They're great equalizers. They're you know, they really appeal to people who have autism because the rules make sense and you can socialize within this context that makes sense to you because you know what's expected, you know what the rules are and how you're supposed to do things, and made a world of sense. So
And it gives you a chance for self-expression.
Yeah, and there's lots of, like, you can always express yourself a little bit, typically a little bit better than you can in the real life, because again, it's like you have more options, you have more availability to reflect, you know, more of yourself and that kind of stuff. And I, again, that's in a lot of games, and it's a good system. It's good fun. So again, if you like hack and slash, if you like Diablo, and people often forget, they're like, Diablo wasn't an MMO. It's like, yeah, but it was multiplayer. And I mean, there's a huge case, like, you know, number three was all multiplayer essentially all the time. And so, yeah, there's, it's not, you know, you if you're turned off by the concept of MMOs by like certain other games, you might find, but you like hack and slash games like Diablo, you definitely find that this game is a little bit more up your alley. So, yeah.
Excellent. Well, thank you for that. Any final thoughts, Moon?
Come join us. Come play together. Let's be chickens together.
Absolutely. So there is a Triple S League guild. Is that right? So
it's called Triple S. It's just Triple S. And we are on the Regulus server.
And if you're out there and you want to...
That's North America East.
Sure. Okay, Regulus, North America East. So if you're out there and you want to connect with our Triple S guild in Lost Ark, or you want to talk to Saib and Moon and some of the other folks in our community who have been playing it, check out our Discord server. You can find the link to that in the description below. And it's just a great place where you can find people to chat with about a whole host of topics, from games and movies and TV shows to you know, food and animals and things like that. And you know, we keep it on track. It's about fandoms and stuff like that. We've got great moderators who make sure everything stays above board and non-toxic. So check that out. Links to everything else Triple S related can be found in the description below as well. All right, so we'll have to wrap up talking about NFTs, but this should be a little more lighthearted than our typical approach to the NFT topic. But I mean, is anything lamer than when I said this at the beginning of the show? I guess when Hollywood celebrities decide something is cool, that just, you know, it just tells you that it's really not. I'm sorry. I have to. How out of touch are these people? So we've got several examples of this. So Brie Larson facing criticism for buying an NFT. Now, honestly, Brie Larson, I don't care what Brie Larson.
No, I don't know why anybody would think.
I don't care what Brie Larson does and what she buys with her own money. I honestly don't care. You could point to the hypocrisy of some of these people. Who are, you know, environmentalists, and the common thing is, well, these are bad, these NFTs and crypto are bad for the environment. I don't know where the truth lies on that claim. I think there is some truth to it, but at the same time, servers and computers in general take a lot of energy. But I guess the one thing I will say about that is, when you're using a lot of energy to run this blockchain for places where it's really not necessary, such as, say, having unique items in a video game, then yeah, I'd say, you know, why are you doing whatever damage you're doing, or wasting the energy you're wasting for something that doesn't need blockchain technology? You know, that's where I would come down on that for sure. But anyway, so there's a lot of even a lot of people who supported Larson through her, you know, when Captain Marvel was getting crapped on, deservedly, in my opinion,
Again, not because
she's a female-led superhero.
She's the strongest superhero. It's because the writing's terrible.
The writing was terrible.
Some of my favorite characters in sci-fi would be Captain Catherine Janeway.
Whole argument about it being, oh, because it's a female-led superhero who is super strong. No, that was a stupid argument made by stupid people. Because a lot of the people who didn't like Captain Marvel loved Wonder Woman.
Ridley.
The first one.
Yeah, Wonder Woman.
Or insert your example here. You know, if it's well done. But anyway, so a lot of people who stuck with her through all of that.
The story writing behind Black Panther, aside from the whole, we're going to reach out and open our hands to the world by going to the richest country in the world and opening an office in the richest, one of the richest places, cities in that country. It's like that was the only one where it's like, I'm pretty sure there's people who were starving and dying of thirst, you know, a lot closer to you that could have used your help faster. Other than that, Black Panther was a great story. It had great female characters, really, really well done. And I'm excited for the next one, because that one's going to be female led. And I can't remember her name, but the girl who played his sister in the last one, she's playing in this new one. And I don't remember her name because I just generally don't remember Hollywood names at all. I'm excited to see that one. That's probably going to be the first movie I'm going to see in theaters in probably a long time because of all these closures and lockdowns and stuff. But yeah, it's like, it's not because of that. It's because you had a bad story that didn't make sense, wasn't well directed, and had personality that was flat as a board.
She did not portray the character well, in my opinion. Plus, the character itself.
That's not a physical joke. That's a literal, the writing was flat.
She's not flat as a board physically, that's for sure. No. But I dislike Captain Marvel, and Brie Larson aside, I didn't like Captain Marvel, the character, for the same reasons that I can't really get into Superman. Mm-hmm. Just overpowered and has no weaknesses. Well, Superman, you know, kryptonite, but okay. You can only do so many stories about Superman getting weakened by kryptonite. You know, I'm much more into, but yeah, like Wonder Woman, loved Wonder Woman. And most of the people that were crapping
on villains, the villains in DC are way more interesting than the superheroes are on average. The villains in DC are phenomenally better. I think the heroes obviously or overall have a more interesting story in Marvel.
Yeah.
But in DC, the villains are where the good stories are at. The villains are fascinating. They're cool. And you can tell it because you have a guy who's basically, you know, a demigod who can't be stopped by anything other than kryptonite, which somehow manages to make it into every episode.
Batman, I really like Batman. Not necessarily every Batman movie or always how he's portrayed, but Batman... I find Batman way more interesting than Superman.
Yeah, he's the most interesting superhero.
He has no superpowers. He has to really struggle, and he's got weaknesses. And not financially, but you know, he's just a more interesting character. Anyway, we're not here to talk about that. we could talk comic book heroes another time. But anyway. The point was, a lot of people who stuck with her through the whole controversy about how terrible Captain Marvel was, or, you know, by some people's opinion, some people actually like it and whatever. A lot of those people are turning their back on her. That's how divisive this
NFTs are.
NFTs are. Another somebody tweeted, you know, I've defended you every day since the backlash for Captain Marvel, and then you pull this. So there you go. In recent months, many celebrities like Eminem, Justin Bieber, Snoop Dogg, Steph Curry, Paris Hilton, Lindsay Lohan, and Grimes, among others, have invested in NFTs. Well, I mean, they can afford to.
Mm-hmm.
But this is what I find really interesting about the Brie Larson thing. This from Matt Binder or Bender on Twitter. I don't know anything about this guy, but he put this out. Gwyneth Paltrow, Reese Witherspoon, Eva Longoria, and Brie Larson all pumping the same NFT project today. 3 out of 4 of these celebs just happened to tweet about it within 45 minutes of each other. Interesting. That's
somebody had a meme.
There's something being cooked up here. It's just really, it's really interesting that, like, the timing is very conspicuous there. Then we had Jimmy Fallon on his show with Paris Hilton. And they're talking about their NFT investments in these ape pictures. And it was the most awkward minute and a half of television I think I've seen in a long time. It was super, super cringe. And you could tell they're trying to get people excited about the fact that they bought these stupid ape pictures, which I don't understand these things. They look like...
There's a lot of people just screenshotting them.
Well,
it's ridiculous.
There's that, but all of the apes, it's like a Mr. Potato Head. They just swap out the different parts. And, like, they swap out the glasses for a different pair of glasses. Right. You know, they change the color. Otherwise, it's the same ape. It's not like it's some artist drawing each one of these. So, this was epic peak cringe in terms of they thought this would connect with people. They thought people would think this was interesting and engaging. Just shows how out of touch these people are. But more in the gaming space now. Team 17, the indie game publisher and developer, canceled their NFT plans after one day of massive backlash, and they were like, "Nope, we're out." They backpedaled really fast. This is the team behind the Worms project. They had announced the MetaWorms NFT project, and a day after deciding to do that, or a day after announcing that, they've backpedaled and they say, "We have listened to our Teamsters." Sorry, whenever I hear Teamsters now, I just watched that Al Pacino, the Scorsese movie on Netflix that was about that Teamsters guy. Never mind. Development pattern. They've listened to people and backpedaled on it. So some of the responses that they got, I'm not going to be able to... Oh, yeah. So they say, these are some developers that Team 17 works with. Ghost Town Games said, "Hey there. We at Ghost Town Games just wanted to reassure you all that Overcooked and any of our future games will never engage in NFTs. We don't support NFTs. We think they carry too great an environmental and social cost. We also want to ask folks to be kind when voicing their concerns to friendly neighborhood community managers." And then Agro Crab was a little more forceful. They said, "We condemn Team 17's decision to produce and engage with NFTs. We believe NFTs cannot be environmentally friendly or useful, and really they're just an overall effing grift."
So, to put it bluntly.
Yep. And they said they won't be working them on future titles unless it's reversed. That's crazy. Ukulele developer Playtonic also issued a statement against NFTs. It reads, "To our community, we have no interest in utilizing NFTs in any aspect of our business now or in the future. We do not endorse the use of NFTs in the wider world." And then blah, blah, blah. You know, be respectful, but when voicing your displeasure. Yeah, so that's what's going on in the world of NFTs. Indie devs It just shows you who's in touch and who's out of touch. Hollywood celebs, out of touch as usual. Indie developers, a little more in tune with what the people who buy their games think about this stuff. AAA devs and publishers, not necessarily the devs, but publishers, they just see the dollar signs. That's about all there is to it.
There's been devs that have been... throwing back saying, you know, we don't accept this. We don't want this to happen. We don't want this. And they have been pushing back against this considerably in their own studios. And I think this is probably like a good thing. So it's a very good thing that they're fighting back against this already.
All right. And that about wraps it up for our show today. So thank you so much, everybody, for joining us. Thank you for sticking with us through the entire show. Please slam that like button if you haven't yet. Check out the Discord server. Check out the Patreon and the merch store, and all of the stuff can be found in the description below. And please join the community. You'll find some great people to chat with about whatever you're interested in. And, of course, subscribe so you can catch the next episode. Also, we have Maximum News with Max Derrett and Subsidian on this channel once a week as well. So you get your double dose of gaming news. That's the Augmented Reality Podcast and Maximum News right here on Triple S Podcasts. So that's two episodes per week of solid news content relating to gaming and pop culture. And of course, on main channel, you'll find game guides, reviews, comedy stuff, and a lot more. Special thank you to our Patreon supporters whose names you have seen appearing on top of the screen throughout the podcast. Also, our channel members on the main channel, that kind of a thing. I really appreciate you folks. And thank you for engaging in the live chat today. If you're watching after the fact, leave your comments below. We want you to be part of the discussion as well, so leave your comments down there. This has been a presentation of the Triple S League. My name is Ash on behalf of Cybe and Newtag. Thank you all so much for listening, and we'll talk to you again very soon.